This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Well, welcome to the second hour of the Financial Sense News Hour, the big picture. I have to say, this may be the first time that Jim Poplava has gone on vacation where we haven't had some kind of financial crisis. One time he went on vacation, we had Hurricane Rita. If I'm remembering correctly, one time we had the California fires with all of that destruction. And then in 2015, I remember the crisis with the yuan. So I can't say definitively, but it looks like Jim Poplava may have gone on vacation and there is no financial crisis. So what we're going to do is something special for the program today where we're going to create a financial crisis. No, we're not going to do that. Chris Poplava and Ryan Poplava, they're going to be explaining what has happened that's created all the volatility. In fact, not only what's happened in the recent past over the last couple of months, but what's happening now and what we can look forward to going forward. In fact, we're going to be covering the Fed, earnings, the market, and the economy. So I'm going to go ahead and hand this over to Ryan Poplava and Chris Poplava.
Thank you, Chris. Last time, Chris, you and I spoke together on the podcast. It was back in August of last year. Jim was on vacation again. Like Chris said, no crisis at the time. But interestingly, you and I, if I remember, were talking about the global slowdown and how things have been slowing since January in the global economy, and vice versa. We have been seeing just the great growth in the U.S. In fact, still, to this day, it's been one of the best growth rates of this economic cycle with, I think, GDP growth of 4.2% in the second quarter. And since then, we've slowed down a little bit. But, you know, that's what we're in the face of our backdrop of looking at global growth slowing. Our view at that time was that the U.S. would recouple. And it took a couple of months. But, so far from the GDP, what things have been looking, how they've been tracking, we're pretty much on course that with our view. Have things changed at all for you?
No, they haven't. If you look at the call that we made back then, the call was that the U.S. economy's growth rate was going to be peaking, which it pretty much did in August and September. And since then, the Conference Board's leading economic indicators rolled over. We've seen housing roll over. We've seen employment decelerate. Retail sales took a nosedive in December and really shocked a lot of people. And overall, the economic data has actually continued to worsen here in the U.S. And surprisingly, what a lot of people are expecting is that we would see global growth begin to stabilize. And there, we're really not seeing that yet. If you look at Italy, it's in recession. Europe is a mess, which is why last week the European Central Bank really revised down its forecast and began to inject stimulus. We're seeing the IMF, OECD, a lot of different outfits are lowering the projections for this year. So we have yet to see a bottom in global growth. And in terms of the U.S., we're kind of still in the early innings of our growth slowdown. So I still think the slowdown theme is still well in play. Well, with a quick summary of the last conversation that we had, what we really want to talk about right now is what has transpired in the last 3 months. We went from December being the worst December ever for the S&P 500, even going back to the Great Depression, followed by one of the best Januaries that we've seen since the late 1970s. So a lot of volatility has transpired, and there's a lot of thoughts and opinions in terms of what caused it. Is it over? Are we still in a bear market? And that's what we want to talk about next.
Yeah, and Chris, I think when we look at what has transpired, looking at that market volatility, there was, at the time back in December, when I remember, you know, the markets correcting, a lot of concern. It felt like it was a lot of market momentum, right? The algorithm trades were in place. The trend was down. We were trading a small narrow period in October and November, and then those things broke. A lot of that, if I recall, was built around the Fed. And a lot of the Fed talking about raising interest rates, still being very concerned over inflation and wage inflation at the end of the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter. And just around that period, there was that December 3rd speech by Powell, where the markets just really started to take more of a nosedive. And then finally, at the policy meeting in December, we saw there was a lot of expectations that the dot plot, which is the estimations of the different board members, we were anticipating, the market was anticipating that we would see a cut from the third quarter dot plot, which was around 4 rate hikes over the next year, including the December possibility of a rate hike. And we were expecting to see probably a rate hike in December and then them ratchet down that estimate to maybe only 2 next year versus previous estimates around 3. So the market got what it expected, but they wanted to see more. So we wanted to see a Fed maybe forego that rate increase in December because the market was already down like 12%, wasn't it? You know, so if that was the consensus then likewise in January with the Fed going in reverse, doing the patient comment on January 4th in his meeting with Yellen and Bernanke, it's a total backpedal, right? And they're now saying they're data dependent. But what do you think? Do you think they're on pause or are they still going to go again this year?
December is probably going to be, in hindsight, the last Fed rate hike of the cycle. And I say that because I think if you look at the U.S. economy, we're seeing peak growth. If you look at the labor, if you look at housing, you look at auto production, there's just so much deceleration in the system right now. And I don't see any sign of reacceleration going forward. The other thing, too, that a lot of people need to keep in mind is that the impact of monetary policy hits the economy with a lag. And so when the Fed had its last rate hike in December, we should still see that being translated into various loan categories that adjust to the prime rate and then the impact that it has for credit for borrowers, whether it's the consumer or corporations. So even with the Fed tightening in December, even if they go on pause, we have seen a slight decrease in mortgage rates, but home prices are still above where they were back in December. For most people, affordability is still an issue. And so I do think that the Fed is done because I still think we'll see continued slowing because of the rate hikes that they've had over the last few years.
Yeah, Chris, and I think that goes right towards, I think, the first consensus that you and I want to talk about, which is that the Fed is being patient, this view that the Fed is not going to go anymore this year. If you look at Fed fund futures going out to January of next year, there's no probability that they're going to raise. The market is saying there's absolutely none. Of course, I think we have Bloomberg estimates, which are maybe one hike. And again, the dot plot, the Fed itself thinks they're going to raise twice this year. Of course, things have changed since that December meeting. So the consensus then, again, is that the Fed will not make a move this year. But I think this all goes towards this whole debate. I haven't heard a whole lot of debate on it. Maybe you and I can start it right now. What is patient? What's the definition of patient? Is it done or is it 6 months? Is it a year? Is it, again, we're done? What do you think?
I think patience should be interpreted as a pause. The question being, what does that mean in terms of the length of that pause? I think we'll get a little bit more clarity on that later this month at the next Fed meeting, because in December, their projection was for 2 rate hikes in 2019. So they could conceivably pause for the first 6 months of this year and still raise twice in the latter half of the year and get their 2 hikes. So it'll be interesting to see what their projections are updated for this month compared to December. Do they only project 1 rate hike or 0? Or are they still projecting 2? So if they're still projecting 2, we're a little bit later in the year, that likely means that they're thinking they're going to go twice in the second half of this year. So it will be interesting to see, are they going to be coming closer to what the market expects, which is 0 rate hikes for this year? Or is the market going to have to readjust to what the Fed's reality is?
Yeah, Chris, I think you and I both have the same view of this patient not being the same as what the Fed futures are saying, which is they're already done. If we look at the dot plot, I already mentioned it again, we're going to see an update next week, and that's going to be just crucial to see what their opinion has changed, and will that affect the Fed futures market if the Fed says, no, we're still on for 2 hikes this year, even though we're patient right now. So that definition of how long is patient, I think that's kind of crucial. I think the market's going to move on that if it's way out of whack next week when we finally hear from the Fed. Now, one thing we should consider is that when in one of its policy statement, I believe back in January, they talked about how one of the factors of why they were wanting to be patient is market volatility was very high. That, I think back to the January 4th speech, rather, when the Fed put was put into place, again, the markets were very volatile. And since then, we've seen volatility actually collapse. According to the VIX, which is a measure of volatility, that has plummeted more than 45% since January 4th. So if volatility has come down, now I'm pretty positive. I mean, we just had the 60 Minutes speech last weekend where the Fed said we'll be patient on interest rates, and he sees only if he sees evidence of the global economy maybe picking up. And of course, we just heard from the ECB last week with Draghi installing a whole new long-term refinancing operation. So definitely we're not moving in that direction yet.
Well, the debate in terms of what pause means by the Fed should be alleviated next week when we see the updated dot plot. Next thing I think would be a really great topic to cover is the idea in terms of corporate earnings in the U.S. If you look at corporate estimates, the first quarter is going to be most likely negative for the S&P 500. A lot of people believe that that will be a trough for corporate earnings with a reacceleration into the second quarter. But we've had other people on our show like Jim Bianco who thinks we could possibly have an earnings recession where we have back-to-back negative earnings growth. And there's others like Mike Wilson, the head strategist at Morgan Stanley, who's also making the call for an earnings recession. So another topic of debate is the consensus view on corporate earnings. Have they troughed, or is Q2 going to be the next trough?
Yeah, Chris, you're right. I mean, the consensus right now is was totally reversed after December 31st. So if we're looking at specifics here, expectations for the S&P 500's growth was growth of 2.8% in the first quarter. And now since we've had the earnings season talking about what were the results of the fourth quarter, those guidelines by companies, whether they're sandbagging or not, remain to be seen, but estimates have fallen drastically. So from 2.8% growth down to negative 3.4% growth right now projected as of the end of, looks like March 8th from FactSet. So the question now is whether analysts have overshot. We'll have to see if companies sandbagged estimates for the year and whether they can beat lowered estimates now. I think so far we've seen two companies report for the first quarter, and both of them beat on earnings and only one of them beat on revenues. And if companies hit the same mark they guided for, then an earnings decline in Q1 would be the first decline since Q2 of 2016. So here we are. We have a new consensus. Earnings are going to be down. But Chris, actually, the consensus is that earnings are going to bounce back in Q2. So, you know, it's interesting. You talked about an earnings recession. And, you know, Goldman's economic research team argued in February that in more than 50% of cases where the S&P 500 entered into an earnings recession of two quarters or more of negative earnings growth, those were not followed by actual economic recessions within at least 2 years. I think it was like 11 out of 13. And also, that corporate tax rates, you know, given what we experienced last year being lowered, that contributed very much to the 20% growth in S&P 500 earnings last year. And vice versa, now that this is the growth effect from that is fading, it was a one-time situation, you know, that's a factor. It's got to be a factor in your opinion, isn't it? That growth is slowing, or is it still back to our consensus view back in summer of 2018 where we talked about a global slowdown? Do you think it's the global slowdown that is going to be pulling us down, or are there other factors?
I think you have to take growth into consideration. If you look at the S&P 500, I believe around 40% of the S&P revenue comes from abroad. So we're very much impacted by economic growth outside of our borders. Another major factor is currencies. If you're a company with sales in Europe, denominated in euros, or denominated in other countries' currencies, when you retranslate those sales back into U.S. dollars on your quarterly statements, currencies have a significant impact, and we did see a decent move in the dollar last year. The dollar's been essentially bottom in the first quarter of 2018. It's up since then. That's been an impact in terms of corporate earnings. We haven't seen the dollar reverse course here, so the dollar is at best neutral, but it still could be possibly a headwind for many corporations who have earnings from abroad. So looking at that, again, we're not really seeing a sign of global growth stabilizing even as of February. So if we're not seeing global growth stabilizing yet, and if we're going to see continued deceleration in the U.S., I don't think that bodes well for corporate earnings looking ahead.
You know, Chris, I think you hit a real key gem in there, and you talked about the dollar. I was reading Vermilion's research this week, and they were talking about how conditions are shaping up for, on the charts at least, on emerging markets. And that's been very interesting. I think from hearing from you earlier this week, you were talking about Jeff Gundlach just really pounding the table that any kind of allocation you have towards emerging markets, it should be at full right now. But back to Vermilion, they talked about the dollar, and you talked about the dollar just now and its effects on these multinational corporations. And the dollar's been trading sideways for a good period now here for quite a few months. And with the dollar doing what it's doing, it's in the view of Vermilion that if the dollar finally breaks down here, I'm not sure what's going to cause that. That could be our earnings. You know, we just had a really bad jobs report last Friday, so it could be economic data that would cause the global market to be more concerned about the U.S.'s projections on growth. But if the dollar was to correct, that could really be a huge catalyst and stimulus for emerging market growth and maybe possibly turn things around there versus, you know, our opinion of the slowdown last year.
What we have to see is, you know, how, why and how would the dollar fall? Is it going to be, you know, which currency is going to rally against the dollar to cause that? The thought was that we might see a recovery in Europe. And just the ECB last week put cold water on that thought with the euro plunging with their announcement and reducing their expectations of a rate hike. Even in Japan, we're not really seeing a hawkish tone over there. So for the dollar to roll over, it would have to be, in my opinion, the U.S. dramatically decelerating relative to the rest of the world, where the rest of the world would stabilize. In that point, that's where I think we can see the dollar sell off. But as of right now, we have not seen a real weak dollar, mainly because of the weakness in the euro.
Yeah, I agree. You know, we just haven't seen it. You know, what's the other option right now as far as currencies? Where is their strength elsewhere? Where's their better economic strength? You know, Jim is often used, the U.S. is the best house in a bad neighborhood. It still feels like that's playing out right now. So that's kind of taking a look at earnings, and we've taken a look at Fed. Let's now turn to economics. You know, there's this consensus view that we have seen a growth slowdown. And in last week's February report, you know, just talking about the jobs report, that was a really big hiccup last Friday in that jobs report of only gains of 20,000. I was reading a couple of economists this week, and some of their views is that, this is from Moody's, that the just as much as the January report maybe overstated strength, it's likely that this February report overstated weakness. And the recent weakness may be due to temporary factors like seasonality. Since 2010, Q1 typically averaged around 1.7% growth, which is around 0.7% on average lower than growth in other three quarters. Secondly, there was the government shutdown to consider, which is, you know, obviously behind us. This cost was a reduction of around 0.4% in GDP. So let's take a look at the consensus, Chris. My view is that listening to this economist and others, the projection is that we're going to see growth in Q2. Things are going to bounce back. That what we saw in the first quarter was typically seasonality, maybe weather related, as well as, you know, these issues with the government shutdown. Those were very short term oriented. And how much does that play into your view right now on the economy?
Well, I think the best way to kind of project out is by looking at leading economic indicators, which do a pretty good job of leading trends in economic growth. Just looking at the Conference Board's leading economic index, that's peaked in, I believe it was September of last year, and that continues to roll over. So we don't see a trough yet in the conference board's LEI, which would mean that the GDP for the U.S. should continue to decelerate. We developed our own LEI that is similar to the conference board, which tries to measure pickups and decelerations in economic growth. And ours tends to lead the conference board's LEI by several months. And for the first time of this entire expansion, our own proprietary LEI is in negative territory. So that is a concern, and it has yet to show any sign of a trough.
Yeah, and Chris, your leading economic indicators, the index that you've put together and have created, I believe we're going to have that on your most recent quarterly newsletter. That's going to go out to the public as well as our clients with some of our more proprietary information there. Can our listeners find that chart somewhere on our site right now?
We're going to have that article up pretty shortly, either at the end of this week or at the first part of next week. And there you'll clearly see the relationship between our LEI versus the conference boards. And the concerning thing, as I mentioned, is that it is in negative territory for the first time of this entire expansion. And it suggests that the U.S. economy is not going to bottom in the first quarter. It might be more of a second or third quarter story, because as of yet, there's no sign of a turnaround. And what makes that very concerning is the, you know, looking at where we are in the business cycle. If you're really early in the business cycle, or even mid-part way, where you're still seeing the unemployment rate fall, you're seeing housing activity continuing to pick up, labor, incomes, and you're still seeing a lot of growth, there's times where the economy catches its breath. And that could be often at times where the Fed just starts raising interest rates, and you see some initial cooling. It could be from temporary weakness abroad that hurts our export sector. So there are, you know, kind of fits and starts during the full cycle of the business cycle. But the concern I have is that we're seeing a slowdown in terms of U.S. economic growth. At the same time, the business cycle index we created that measures where we are in the business cycle, this is as late as we've been, or the highest reading we've seen since the late 1960s. And the concern is taking on excessive risk at this late stage of the business cycle. What we did is we looked at our business cycle index, and we looked at returns on the S&P going out 12 months, 2 years, and 3 years. And when our business cycle index, which ranges from 0 to 100, we typically define late cycle being north of 70. When we look at returns at this elevated level going out 1 to 2 to 3 years, returns are either flat to negative. So, you know, for us, you know, the next phase after being this late in the cycle is an economic downturn. And so seeing our LEI moving into negative territory, there are concerns that there could be recession beginning to build on the horizon.
It's interesting that you brought up recession, and we, of course, have already talked about a possible earnings recession, which would be two negative quarters of earnings declining, growth declining. But, you know, it's interesting because on recessions, and I was just going back to, you know, some of those old age adages that recessions don't happen because an economic expansion dies of old age. This is the longest expansion in history. Usually it's a catalyst like oil or interest rate shocks, maybe an aggressive Fed and tightening monetary policy. Of course, that was the opinion in the fourth quarter, which led to the decline then. Fiscal policy enacts some sort of large taxes or sometimes spending cuts, or because of some currency or credit crisis shuts down liquidity. So, you know, in your view, I haven't seen anything along those lines except maybe the Fed being a little too aggressive and extremely hawkish in the fourth quarter in the face of, again, the global slowdown, which started back in January. Where's the possibility right now of some sort of shock? Or is this just, in your opinion, maybe just a slowly rolling growth slowdown that will eventually lead to a recession?
You're right, Ryan. Economic expansions do not die of old age. And to take the words from Ben Bernanke, former Fed chairman, he said they actually get murdered, and usually by the Fed. And, you know, that brings up an interesting thought. You know, are we there yet? You know, with the Fed going on pause, a lot of people think that there's no really risk of recession. And, you know, again, kind of what I was mentioning earlier, what, you know, a lot of people need to understand is that even if the Fed pauses, because of the lag effect of monetary policy and even fiscal policy for that matter, it takes a while for that to transition into the economy. Just to give a case in point, in the last cycle, Ben Bernanke last raised rates in 2006 as the housing slowdown was beginning to pick up steam. And yet the stock market continued to rally for more than a year later into 2007, with the recession ultimately beginning in December of 2007. So even with the Fed going on pause in 2006, that was not enough to avert a coming recession that was still out by a year, a little bit more than a year and a half out. And there's some debate right now if the Fed has already raised too much. And one of the strategists that we respect and we've had on the show before is Barry Bannister. He's the head strategist at Stifel Nicolaus. In his view and estimation, he feels that the Fed is actually have gone too far already, looking at where current Fed funds rates are relative to the neutral rate, which is estimated by the Federal Reserve, I believe, of Atlanta. And from his viewpoint, if you look at where the Fed funds rate typically ends up relative to the neutral rate, we've been seeing that spread come down more and more with each cycle as there's more debt and leverage in the economy, meaning that it takes a less aggressive Fed or less rate hikes to finally burst the economy than prior cycles because of how much debt we have. And while we haven't seen too much debt being accumulated by households, I would not say that's the same case for corporations and the federal government, which have clearly gone on a borrowing binge.
Yeah, Chris, I think you hit the very key subject that Jim has been talking about for about a year now. You've been talking about it and in some of your articles, and that, you know, if we're talking about that economic expansions get murdered by some sort of shock, even though the Fed was, they cut their interest rates or they stopped around 2006. But what do we have that was building up leading up to that? All of the excesses in the most largely owned asset class, housing, before that. So when housing corrected, because of how perverse and how almost every individual investor, whether they're in the stock market or not, is somehow affected by this, that had humongous repercussions, which led to eventually the main financial crisis. But debt right now, of course, we've got ballooning national debt. We continue to grow many other debts, but corporate debt, you know, with all of the frenzies towards corporate buybacks over the last few years, et cetera, that has led to a humongous portion. If you look at the bell curve and how much we have in the different ratings on bonds, you have a humongous portion that are at the very bottom rung of investment grade. And just a small little slowdown in the economy or companies lowering their growth expectations, what are the concerns that some of this debt could be then downgraded and go into junk status? And that's the biggest concern that Jim has and you have, a lot of what we have here. And I think one of the other shocks that was the main concern for the Fed last year, which was leading in inflationary concerns, was the average hourly wage, which we saw jump up big time in January of 2018. And at that very point, you know, that caused some real major concerns over inflation. We saw interest rates rise. But Goldman's economic team thinks that largely this increase that we saw last year in average hourly wages has been offset by cheaper oil. But I guess right now, Chris, it's just really hard to say where this shock is going to come from your and I's perspective right here. You know, we see some of the risks, but we don't see any really clear signals that we have some major, you know, rises in interest rates, a major rise in crude oil, a major rise in employment costs. We don't see that just yet.
That's true. But, you know, sometimes it's death by a thousand cuts. You know, if you look at a recession is really just looking at negative growth. But, you know, you don't have to see a huge hit to the economy. For example, if you look at the 2001 recession, that really wasn't felt by most of the country. That was more of excess investment in technology and communications. It was certainly felt by the tech sector and the stock market. But in terms of the consumer, the unemployment rate did not really spike significantly in 2001. And if you look at housing was just getting ready to go into full swing. So people's, you know, largest asset, their home, was appreciating. Retail sales was not really where the hit was. So it was a very mild recession, as was the 1991 recession.
Yeah, because I think, not to debate you here, but back in 2000, we had excess, right? We had excess in the stock market after a humongous bull market in technology stocks, and then we had that unwind. And of course, that was a very widely owned sector and a very widely owned asset class. So seeing that pull around, even though the economy was doing well, I recall very vividly of a rotation very briefly when the NASDAQ started correcting in April of 2000, that money was going into the Dow Jones Industrial Average and it was going into the S&P 500. We saw those very briefly come up as that asset class rolled over. But eventually, like you said, the economy did roll over as, you know, if you see your assets drop 50% in your portfolio, you're not going to go out and go do some spending crazy stuff.
That's true. But, you know, what I'm kind of looking for are some of the early warning signs that we're getting close towards a recession. A good, you know, example of that is just looking at default rates. When the Fed begins to raise interest rates, that tends to kind of filter into all different types of loan categories, like home equity lines of credit, which are most of them are floating rates. Those are increased by the pickup in the Fed funds rate. And if you look at default rates, HELOCs and other lines of credit, they typically follow what the Fed does with the lag of anywhere from a year and a half to 2 years. Just recently, the Federal Reserve released data on default rates for various loan categories, and we saw that there was more than 7 million Americans that are more than 90 days delinquent on their auto loans. And the default rate is currently the highest we've seen since 2010. So there are signs of stress beginning to pick up in terms of the economy, in terms of those who are most leveraged or have the weakest balance sheets. And when we look at other things such as continuing claims, jobless claims, those tend to do a pretty good job of leading the business cycle in terms of predicting recessions before they happen, as well as peaking before recessions end. And one of the things that I noticed was the continuing claims bottomed in October of 2018, and we've been seeing a rising trend in that. And if they continue to pick up, that would be a concern that there could be a recession on the horizon, because they typically bottom about anywhere from 16 to 17 months in advance of the onset of a recession. And if October is the low in continuing claims, that could be projecting a recession in the first to second quarter of 2020.
Volatility is back. The stock markets are pivoting, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates, and experts are predicting another recession. How will your retirement weather the storm? Are your investments fortified? Do you have a consistent source of income? Financial Sense Wealth Management can help you answer these questions and plan for the unpredictable. We monitor the markets, interest rates, and the economy so you can focus on doing the things you enjoy most. Contact Financial Sense Wealth Management at 888-486-3939. Start planning, stop worrying, and make the most of your retirement. Call 888-486-3939 today. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Yeah, going back to that jobs report from last week, from what I had read from Moody's, we need to be adding at least 100,000 of jobs just to keep up with the population. So only adding 20, that was a big drawdown from last week. So going back, actually, Chris, to what you and I discussed in last year, and maybe this can tie into some of this, where is the excess and where do we see the weakness? I think it ties back to globally what's going on. When you look at when we last discussed, we were talking about the global slowdown back in August, especially in Asia, and how we felt the US would kind of recouple with that theme. Eventually it did. Now, just looking at Europe, their GDP is barely in positive territory, having managed a 0.2% growth quarter over quarter at the end of 2018, and is projected right now to be right around that. Now, Germany specifically has been slowing since June of 2017, and they threw out a negative quarter in Q3 of last year and barely got by on the skin of their teeth from a technical declaration there of recession by announcing only a 0% growth in Q4. So looking at growth projections, it appears that across the board, there's a consensus for growth cooling for all regions, with GDP forecasted at 3% in 2019 for global growth. That's down from 3.1% last year. And now the projections for 2020 are 2.7%. So again, continuing growth slowdown. And the U.S. contribution is due to fade. It really, given that fiscal policy growth from the tax cut last year, you know, it was a one-time thing. And growth is forecasted to fall to 2.7% this year and slowing more into next year at 1.1% estimated so far. So So, Chris, we talked about the Fed, we've talked about earnings, we've talked about the economy. Let's finish up and kind of discuss what's going on in the market itself.
So we've had this spectacular multi-week retracement, but I just don't think things are fundamentally healthy. The economic data continues to deteriorate. And we're starting to see reversals and unemployment claims now rising on a four-week moving average basis. We're starting to see earnings estimates collapsing, margin estimates collapsing, sales dropping. You see housing is negative, surprise indices, confidence is deteriorating. None of these things are at the alarm bell recession, but they're getting fairly close. I mean, we were miles away from anything resembling a caution signal on the economy back in September. But there's been pretty much across the board deterioration in the economic surprise data and just data changes and the like. High yield spreads have come in a lot from their wides of December, but they still have a look that is not doesn't really all that long term.
Talking technically here, in your view, what's the consensus opinion? And I'll weigh in.
You know, in terms of the stock market, Ryan, just like everything, you know, everyone's kind of all over the map. There's a lot of analysts who are projecting all-time highs for the market, others who are, you know, mild recovery in the stock market of, you know, maybe 5-6% for the year. And then you've got, those are a little bit on the outlier. I don't know if anyone was able to catch the recent monthly report from Jeff Gundlach this week, but he spoke on Tuesday on his monthly conference call. And in that, he was saying that he feels that the fundamentals are still bearish, that we are in a bear market in the U.S., and he made the bold call that not only are we in a bear market, but that we are going to take out the December 26th lows and head to even lower levels in the coming months.
There was a question in the queue that, do I regret saying the stocks were in a bear market back when before they fell into a bear market? Not at all. The stock market was, and I believe is, in a bear market. It fell over 20%, that arbitrary number. And it's interesting that the leaders that took us into the October 3 top, the, you know, the FANG stocks, they're mostly down about 20% still from their peaks. So your leaders are nowhere near rebounded back towards the peak. So that's an interesting point. I do think that we're going to take out the December low in the S&P 500 and the stock market broadly, that we're going to take that out sometime during the course of 2019. I think we will actually have a negative sign in front of the stock market at some point, but I think it'll happen sooner this year than it did last year. It took all the way into October to roll over and then finally into December to go negative. I think we'll not be as negative this year, frankly, in the stock market as we were last year.
You know, I remember listening to him in January of last year and kind of given his annual outlook for 2018. And, you know, given he's kind of the new bond keener, that's the title given to him. Most people look for him for his opinion on interest rates and inflation. One of his biggest and highest conviction calls at the onset of 2018 was that the S&P would finish in negative territory. So he gave that prediction early in January of 2018, and then we saw the market roll up a rally over 10% in just the first month alone. So he was looking quite foolish, but then in February we had that steep correction, and the market kind of stabilized for a while, and then eventually the market rallied and hit new highs in September. And his prediction ultimately came true at the end of the year, but it did take that final month of December for that to happen. And so, you know, for him, you know, that was a great call that he made and quite early, you know, looking out for the full year. And so one of the things that he said in his conference call this week is that he does believe the December lows will be taken out. But while it took 12 months for his prediction last year to come true, he believes we'll take out the December lows sooner rather than later, likely in the first half. So I thought that was pretty interesting, kind of hearing his pressing calls before, and that he is not as sanguine as the general market is and actually looking at new lows for the stock market. There's others out there, other strategists like Mike Wilson, who I think has done a pretty good job of covering the market over the last few years. He's more in the sideways camp, where the S&P will be capped at 2,800 on the upside and likely 2,500 on the downside. And I think that's relatively the same view of Bullseye Craig Johnson from Piper, who we've had on the show often. I think his target on S&P on the upside is 2,900 and then 2,500 on the downside. But his prediction is the market will end the year at 2,725, a little bit lower than where we are today. personally, I still have a lot of concerns for the market. We have not taken out the former highs, and there's still a lot of warning signs that I'm concerned about. A lot of people were thinking it was just a blip in terms of the market, also even the economic data. You know, a lot of people dismissed the very sharp drop in retail sales in December. We saw a lot of sentiment figures like the Consumer Confidence Board sentiment figure, the Michigan sentiment measure take a huge hit in January. And another thing that we saw also was the Small Business Sentiment Index took a dive in January. A lot of people, again, attributing that to the stock market and as well as the government shutdown. And people were looking at February to kind of show that was a one-time thing and a turnaround. But we haven't seen that. One of the things that concerns me is the Small Business Index, which is run by the National Federation of Independent Business, the NFIB. Their index took a huge hit in January, and the February result barely even moved up. And we really didn't see any improvement in a lot of their measures. So looking at the Small Business Index, that's a huge concern for me. And the deterioration that we saw over the last 5 months from, you know, looking at September into the first part of this year, the significance and severity of the decline that we saw, whether it was the overall index, it was the hiring plan index, or the question of now is a good time to expand, the decline that we saw was some of the most severe declines that we've seen that are really only occur in the context of a recession. So unless we see that the surveys coming from the small business begin to turn up, that'd be a huge concern because, as we know, small businesses are really the heart of job creation in this country. So Ryan, you know, I was giving some of the estimates and consensus by many that we interview on the show and others out there. What's your take on the market? Are you in the bear or are you in the bull camp?
We've been in this debate on our rooms going back and forth in our investment meetings. But tying into what you already mentioned with like Craig Johnson, I think that's the third option. And that, and I talk about this all the time regarding technical analysis and trends in the market. There are not two trends, bull and bear markets. There are three trends, a sideways trading market or consolidation. That's what I think we're in right now, at least until we take out lows or we take out highs. That's kind of how we got to frame things right now, because we don't have, just let's take, for example, the S&P 500. We look at going from extremes of oversold. There was only, I think, 2% of stocks in the S&P 500 were trading above their 50-day moving average on December 24th. Now, that's moved from that very, very low extreme. We were up towards 93% were trading above their 50-day moving average just 2 weeks ago. So we've gone from extreme to extreme. There was no real there was no base forming at the bottom after the December correction and just the V-spike rally higher. There was no excess that was kind of taken out. There's no formation of an area for this. And I think you're talking about this in the quarterly newsletter that I've been able to peek at. You said the same thing that, you know, in 2015 and 16, at the 16 base, we had a consolidation and then we rose from that bottom pattern, and it was a good foundation for the next leg higher. In my opinion, I don't feel like we've had that. You know, we went down December 24th and immediately we started our move higher, all based off of just amazing mileage, right? That Jerome Powell has gotten from the word patient. Incredible mileage from that. And he continues to get that this week, right? He had the 60-minute speech last week and nothing new. And he talked about patient again. So, you know, we are just enamored with patience. The market keeps heading higher, given that last week we were finally starting that kind of corrective mode down after the market had that excessive move, like I said, extreme to extreme in breadth and performance. Like you said, the major drop in December, major increase in January. So extreme to extreme, that's where things are gone. I don't feel like we ever had that humongous base that formed that led that foundation for the next move higher. So that's my opinion. I think, you know, we're right now treading into resistance. Resistance on the November and October highs, 2,800, another psychological level. The S&P has only traded 3 days now above that. It's trying to consolidate above it, but I'm also seeing some divergences in momentum. You know, there's less momentum here on our second attempt. There's also divergences between the major indices, right? So you've got the S&P and the NASDAQ, which have all taken out their February highs and early March highs, but the Russell has not, and the Dow has not. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you could maybe say, well, it's related to Boeing. You know, Boeing's the one that's holding it back. Maybe, but then how is that the case with the Russell 2000 small cap? And that continues to support what you just said, Chris, about the Small Business Optimism Index being at lows. We've got these, which is interesting because then that also says that the growth we've seen in stocks, is that also tied into this whole feeling that we're going to get this trade agreement between the U.S. and China? That's the consensus. Maybe it's already priced in. We're not going to see that kind of a huge bump in small cap stocks due to that, because those small cap stocks are particularly homeboy stocks. You know, they're U.S. stocks here in the U.S. They're not as concerned about trade with China. So that kind of leads into that small business index, as well as why maybe the Russell might not be able to take those recent highs. So that's what I'm looking for. I'm watching to see what kind of weakness we have here. If things do roll over and consolidate, I think that's healthy given how overbought stocks got in January and February. And then I'm just going to gauge the health of a consolidation there. Like many other technical analysts, they're saying that the market has rallied off of strength in the right areas, right? So cyclicals, industrial stocks, technology really leading here, and to some extent, other areas like energy, et cetera, and materials, which have done well, given that the Fed is no longer in that hawkish mode, has backed off. In addition to seeing emerging markets kind of create that foundation here consolidating, we've seen materials improve. What are your thoughts on something that has not changed in this market rally since December? It's that we still have this inverted yield curve for the U.S. Treasuries. You look at the 3-month, 6-month Treasury bill, 12-month, 2-year, and all of them have higher yields than the 5-year. Of course, that's still lower than the 10-year and the 30-year, but it's just odd to me that given the rally in the stock market that we've seen, we have seen some pickup in some of the economic news, but not all. And given that the Fed has paused, we still see this situation. What do you think about that?
One thing that I came across that was very fascinating to me last year, which was brought out by Charles Gaff from the famous GaffCal Research, was, you know, everyone's kind of fixated looking at the U.S. yield curve, mainly looking at various treasury yields. But what he was looking at, and he thought more relevant to the economy, was not at what levels the U.S. federal government can borrow, but what corporations or the business sector of the economy can borrow from. And to measure the business yield curve, he was using the 10-year Moody's investment grade bond yield, and he was on the long end, and on the short end, he was using the Federal Reserve's bank's prime loan rate, which was what a lot of people can get for various loans, short-term loans. And looking at that, that turned negative early in 2018, and it has remained negative, and in fact has gone even further into negative territory by negative 50 basis points. And what's interesting about looking at the business yield curve versus the traditional yield curve is it often inverts prior to the U.S. Treasury curve inverting. So it kind of gives you a little early read to that. And there have been a few instances where it inverted, but the Treasury curve did not. But every time it inverted, there was something serious going on in the market. It inverted in prior to the 1987 stock market crash. It inverted in 1994, just before the Mexican peso crisis, as well as we saw an inversion before the Asian currency crisis. And then ultimately, we saw an inversion before the 2001 recession. But it turned negative in, I believe it was 2005 in the last cycle, way ahead of the Treasury curve. And the fact that it's been negative and continues to move into negative territories without it recovering, it tends to suggest that we are going to see a yield curve inversion further out on the curve of looking at, you know, the 10-year U.S. Treasury versus the 2-year Treasury. So we have seen some pockets of inversion across the yield curve spectrum, but I would say that one of the, you know, primary yield curve measures that people look at for the Treasury is either the 10-year and 2-year or the 10-year and 3-month. We haven't seen an inversion there yet, but if the business yield curve continues to invert and stay inverted, it does argue that we could see an inverted yield curve still here in the U.S., despite the Fed going on pause, which would spell trouble into 2020 and further support the claims that there is a recession on the horizon.
Chris, if we tie in all of the consensus views and we project that out on the stock market itself, all of these views are that everything's behind us. The weakness in the global economy is behind us, exhibited by emerging markets, which are going through what looks like a bottoming pattern after the weakness from last year. A lot of strategists are advocating, like Gundlach, you know, start moving more into foreign investments and emerging markets. So again, the worst of their slowdown is behind them. Looking at the Fed issue, you know, the worst is behind us. The Fed's no longer raising interest rates, so we don't have to fight the Fed. We can now gear towards reflation. The last statement from them is that they now have, this was in Powell's testimony before Congress, is that they now have the final, it looks like they're a final plan towards ending quantitative tightening, which was essentially allowing their maturities to roll off their balance sheet as well as their interest. So that's now the opinion, the consensus is that that's now behind us. We no longer have a tightening Fed. The other one is on the economy side of things, that yes, we've been slowing down, but we're not looking at any kind of recession yet. And that the consensus view is that this was, again, was just a blip. This was weather. This was the shutdown. And we will be up, up and away from here on the with the economy and growth. And then there's finally earnings. And what the consensus view there is, yes, we'll have a down quarter in growth, but that it'll be back up in the second quarter. So I guess if you take all those consensus views together, Chris, this correction, this 20% down is behind us. There's value there in a number of different places. And so a lot of investors are jumping in on those value areas, as well as, you know, hey, up, up and away from here. We should be able to take out those highs from last year. And this is still a bull market. That's, I think, the consensus view. You know, I think, Chris, given that our view is not in line with some of that, you know, we think that the Fed is going to raise interest rates. We think that, you know, we'll have to see how earnings play out. But given some of your economic indicators, you feel that the top is in for growth. And it's very possible that we continue to see these leading economic indicators indicate that we'll be seeing growth slow down for both the economy as well as earnings. But I think, you know, if we're to really forecast here and project something, I think we got to get Jim on vacation a little longer than a week to where maybe we can get that crisis that we need. What do you think, Chris Prytar?
Ryan, not only do I agree, but the Financial Sense Board of Trustees has met and fully agrees that Jim's vacations from now on need to be 2 weeks in duration instead of 1 week. So the motion is carried. In the meantime, we here at Financial Sense thank you for joining us on this edition of the Financial Sense News Hour, and may you find double-digit returns in your kettle at the end of the rainbow. You see what I did there with St. Patrick's Day?
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.